This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
From hockey to wrestling, football to golf, no sport left unturned. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning,
Wally. Good morning, Naz. Oh. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
I jumped the gun. Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigobon. Joining me as usual, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz. How are you?
Good, Wally. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you. Also joining us, former Washington Capitol, Toronto Maple Leaf, Buffalo Sabre, I don't know if there's anything else in there, Hershey Bear, Leapin' Lou Franceschetti. Leapin' Lou, how are you this morning?
Good morning, gentlemen. It's a great day.
It should be a great day. I hope to all our listeners, if you're driving around downtown Toronto this morning, there's a lot of traffic in a lot of different places. It's a Toronto marathon this morning, which makes it exceedingly difficult to navigate downtown Toronto road. So if you've got to get any place in a hurry in downtown Toronto this morning, you may want to leave a little bit earlier. Anyways, gentlemen, we've got a lot of fires in a lot of different places. We've got the Toronto Blue Jays, big game tonight, game six. We'll get into that. We got the Toronto Maple Leafs. Didn't get a result we would have liked last night. The Buffalo Bills ain't playing all that well, Naz. Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Big one for the Irish last night to beat the Southern Cal Trojans. Alabama's doing amazing. They beat four ranked opponents in a row. I think that's some kind of record. We'll get into that just to let our listeners know. We've got Sportsnet's Matt Marchese coming up shortly after the first break. He's going to bring us up to speed on all of these topics. And later on in the show, we've got Frank Pomerico, who was the captain of the 1973 Notre Dame Fighting Irish team. Does some broadcasting work down at Notre Dame, and we're going to chat some Irish football, and as part of that, I'm sure we'll go around the college football horn and talk about a lot of the other stories that are happening in college football south of the border. Guys, I don't know where to start this one off, so why don't we start off with, we'll get an opportunity obviously to talk about the Jays quite a bit in this show, but let's talk about what happened last night. The Toronto Maple Leafs, guys, they lost to the Seattle Kraken. Leafs haven't, for lack of a better observation, I can't say that they've set the NHL on fire in their opening, although, you know, slow starts for the Leafs is not unusual. We don't like to get too excited in, you know, six games or however many games we are into the season. This is not unusual for them to get off to a, quotation marks, slow start. But I'll turn it over to you, Naz. Your observations of the Toronto Maple Leafs so far, specifically with reference to last night's game against the Kraken, a game against the Rangers earlier in the week, and this is usually the way they start off the season, right, Naz?
Yes, they do, and they should be okay for the rest of the year. As long as they keep out of the injury bug, they should be okay, Wally. Look at Florida now. They're in deep trouble, believe it or not. They have no, the depth isn't there as it used to be. So look out for Florida not being deep. Life and death to make the playoffs too.
Yeah, it's Florida's had a little bit of a rough stretch. I don't know if you guys noticed, Lou. Brad Marchand had an interesting episode in the game against Buffalo the other night. He got into a little scrap with Rasmus Dahlin, and somehow he decided he was going to bring Dahlin's helmet to the penalty box with him, and he ripped off a couple of straps and then gave it back. Par for the course, I guess, for Brad Marchand, Lou.
Well, I think Darlene took his teddy bear.
from the commercial.
From a Tim Hortons commercial. That's why he was a little upset. Maybe he wanted to keep the helmet there for his home. But you know what, guys? This is a playoff-built team with the Leafs right now. I was there last night watching it. I've been there for the couple of games. And I think they're having a tough time finding their identity. They've got a bigger team. They've got more of a team that's built for the playoffs. And they're not playing that way right now. Trying to install that big physicality into their game, and it's quite not there because let's take it, guys. They miss Mitch Marner, and I think Austin Matthews misses him also. And it's going to take, I think, another maybe 10 or 15 games to get adjusted to Berube's style of play, especially for the bigger guys there, if Marner was there.
Yeah, it's we're 6 games into the season. We're getting into how much do we miss Marner? Because we're probably going to be talking about that all year long. But Marner finally got loosened up a little bit in Vegas. I think he's finally got his first couple of goals. But and then Eichel has got off to a great start. So I wonder who's responsible for that. Guys, a big story, it's like the biggest story around Leafland is, and we've got nothing better else to talk about and when we, get to justify some of their performances. But the big story around Leafland seems to be Easton Cowan and whether he is going to stick with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Can't recall, Lou, you probably know this better than me, but I'll turn over to you, Naz, and then back over to you, Lou. Easton Cowan. I can't say that he hasn't looked. He's looked pretty good out there. They've given him first-line minutes. Hasn't put up a lot of points. I don't think he scored yet. He seems to be the biggest story in Leafland right now. I guess obviously the thoughts are, he's playing well for a 20-year-old, should he stick with the Leafs is probably the bigger question.
I don't think he's ready, Wally. Really don't.
And what leads you to that conclusion?
Well, you look around the league and you see all these rookies playing and then belong on the team, like Peter Schaefer, right?
Oh, you mean the kid, the Schaefer, the kid in Long Island?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, apparently he's playing pretty good, but go ahead. Your thoughts on Easton Cowan?
I think he needs some seasoning in the American Hockey League first, and then he can come up to the club later on in the year, but he's not ready yet.
Not ready yet. Lou, correct my memory here. The Leafs have is the rule you've got 10 games to make a decision whether you're going to keep them up or not, and then once you've eaten up into the 11th game, then you've eaten up a year on his whatever they call that, his entry level contract. Your recollection of when do the Leafs have to make? Isn't it the 10th game?
They do, but Wally, his junior days are over.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter how many games they keep up. They can keep him up 10, 15, 20 games. They're still going to burn 1 year of his pro contract.
Okay, so I misinterpreted the rule. Okay, thanks for clarifying that.
That's what the rule is, that if you keep a guy over 10 games, then you're going to burn 1 year of his if you send him back to junior. But now with Easton Cowan, here's a special case.
Well, they're not sending him back to junior.
No, they can't. He's got to go to the Marlies.
He's got to go to the Marlies, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he's got to play in the Marlies, right? So they're burning 1 year of his pro contract no matter what.
Okay.
But the thing with Easton Cowan is he's so used to having the puck with the London Knights and being the cog there that I think right now Berube and the Leafs are trying to give him a different what's the word that I'm trying to use here? Not style, but just a different, maybe you can help me out with this. For him to have the puck and to play in a line with Marner, it's two different things. I'm not saying that they made a mistake by keeping him up here, but now they've got a pretty good feel of where he is. I would send him back down and have him play quality minutes, be on the first power play on the penalty kill, and give him the confidence that he needs that he had with the London Knights to make a big factor in this. I know that they were really looking forward to having him be a big part of this team, but right now it's just not working out.
Well, who's the logical? I don't disagree with you. You know, they're going to have to make a serious decision on Easton Cowan. I mean, you're taking, you know, from the London Knights and you're putting them on the first line with the top goal scorer in the league. And then you've got Matthew Nyes, and you're essentially replacing Mitch Marner. Those are pretty tough shoes to fill for a 20-year-old. this is no criticism of his performance. He's playing as well as you could. You know, there's very little you can criticize him for in terms of how he's played so far. He's playing with confidence. You got to give the kid credit, you know, Lou. He's not scared to, you know, he doesn't seem to be scared to go along the boards. He's taken a couple of shots from some of the defensemen, but I don't disagree with you. I'm not so sure in the long term, you know. You know, and we've got, you know, Berube's got a few more games to, you know, to make that evaluation, as many games as he wants, I guess. And then he's going to have to make it, you know, it's not even a question of whether it's the right thing for Easton Cowan. Is it the right thing for Austin Matthews? Because he hasn't really gotten, you know, he hasn't really unleashed himself so far in the way that we know that Austin Matthews can. Naz, turn over to you. You know, it's not just about Easton Cowan. It's about, you know, is whether he's up or down is one question. Whether being on the first line with Austin Matthews is the right place for him as well.
Yeah, he's got to play, though, you know, Wally. That's why he should be going to the Marlies and getting...
Well, Berube's been using him. I can't... It's not like he's not playing.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, Nice has 8 points already this year, and Cowan has one.
Yeah.
And they're playing on the top line.
On the same line, yeah.
Yeah. I just think he needs some seasoning down with the Martins.
Yeah, Lou, you've played the NHL Wars. You spent some time in the AHL. You're in the Hershey Bears Hall of Fame. You had a pretty good career with the Washington Capitals, the Leafs and Sabres and whatever. You would know better than anybody else, as good as anybody else, what's in the best interest of a 20-year-old in the place of Easton Cowan. Is his better place to hang around here for another 5, 6, 10 games? Is his better place, down on the Marlies playing 25 minutes a game, power play, penalty kill? Or is his better place being on the first line with Austin Matthews for his development?
I really think, you know, the best spot for him is not on the first line with Austin Matthews. And you know that they were trying to put Maselli there at the start of the year after they made the big trade with Utah. The ideal spot for Austin or Cowan would be on the second line. But you got John Tavares there. So if that doesn't work out, then send him down to the Marlies. Let him get his confidence. Let him, because he's used to carrying the puck. And that's all he did in junior. He made things happen. Mind you, they did have a powerhouse there. But still, he's used to having the puck. And when he's on a line with Austin Matthews needs the puck. So it's a really difficult situation. And, you know, he's got great talent. He's a feisty little guy, and they think that maybe they could add that to Austin Matthews' line. But right now, I don't think he's got the confidence to more or less to carry the puck and make things happen with a speed that he did in London.
Well, I could give Cowan credit. I think he's probably playing better than I would have expected. So, you know, it's a few more games. This will play out. And, Berube and Tree Living and the Brain Trust down at MLSC will make a decision on him. But I think that there's one thing that Easton Cowan has proved is he can play in the NHL. So if it's not this year, it's going to be at some point in time. There's certainly no question from what I've seen, that he's going to be a part of the Leafs organization, an important part of it for a while. Whether we need some seasoning down with the Marlies, we'll leave it to Berube and company to figure that one out. I do want to talk about, you know, one of the privileges of doing this show on Sunday mornings is we can react to what happened Saturday night. And interesting, what I found interesting about the post-game conversation from last night is Anthony Stolarz, the goalie, who got run up a few times last night. He wasn't too happy about that. And he was, I'm just going to read some of the quotes that he made after the game last night, which I found, I wouldn't say startling, but what it tells me about Anthony Stolarz is he's not scared to say what's on his mind. And these were exact quotes from post-game conferences from last night from Anthony Stolarz. Number one, enough is enough. It was a good third period, but the first two periods, we kind of let them walk all over us. Pretty striking comments from your goalie. And we just didn't play our game. They outworked us in front of the net. They blocked shot. They beat us up and down the ice. And the score isn't, they just outworked us. Plain and simple. Pretty telling comments from the goalie, from Stolarz, Ness.
Yeah, it is. And he's right. He's absolutely correct what he said. And I can't argue with it, Paul.
Lou, you somewhat surprised that Stolarz would be so blunt? I mean, he wasn't... I don't know if I want to call that shots against his teammates. That perhaps is a little bit too... I don't think he's just saying that. Perhaps he's just making an observation and he's trying to rally the troops, but it sort of reflected a goaltender that was frustrated. And, you know, it seems other teams are taking shots, you know, running him, and he's getting tired of it, Lou.
He really is. And I think this is indicative right from the start of the year. The Leafs have not been the team that they expected to be. They have been outworked. Mason Marchment has been a pain in the butt when he was in Dallas, and now I guess the one thing that teams tell their players that when they play the Leafs is crowd the net, get in front of Stolarz's net face, and that happened last night in one of the goals, and then obviously he pulled the other stuff where, you know, you get hit from behind, and you're so dramatic that you fall into Stolarz, and that's where Stolarz blew the net off the moorings there. But it just goes to show you that you can see everything as a goalie. And maybe the frustration that, you know, Berube's team is supposed to be a hard-working team with big guys and physicality. They haven't given that for the amount of games that they've played this year. So is it a concern? Maybe it is. Maybe Craig will more or less listen to his comments and get the boys on the right track.
Naz, you were talking about the Leafs missing Marner. I think the biggest place they've been missing him so far is on the power play. Man, their power play's been terrible. From a power play, I think, was third in the league last year. I wouldn't say, maybe dramatic to say they look lost out there, but they certainly, I think up until last night, they had one power play goal and they gave up. They gave up a shorthanded goal, so they were net zero. What's going on there? I mean, you've got some pretty good talent out on that power play, but it's not clicking.
No, it looks like the defense has lost a couple of steps. I think that Tanev is a little slow in the back end, and his age may get him eventually. Right, I'm a little worried about the Leaf defense.
Lou, power play. What are you seeing?
You know what? They're going to miss Marner. It's plain and simple. They miss his creativity. And also, you got to look at the other team knows that. So they're taking the options away of more or less getting the puck to Matthews. We know that Nylander, he's the one with the shot. And then you got Tavares and you got Matthew Nyes. So you've more or less, you're... What you're doing is you're taking a look at what they have and you're taking away their great options that they had when Marner was on the ice. But when Marner was on the ice, you could see that he was a legal threat to score himself because he was so good and he had great creativity with the puck. And right now they don't have that. They have a lot of good parts, but the one thing that I'm seeing right now is that they've got to get the puck back to the point and start shooting it and open the lanes up for the front of the net. Because they don't have the guy that's that moves the puck around as well as Mitch did when he was here.
Anyways, we've got to take it to break. We're going to come back from break. We've got Sportsnet's Matt Marchese and big game going on down at the Rogers Center tonight. So let's get into some Blue Jays talk, and I'm sure we'll get into some Buffalo Bills discussions as well. We've got Matt Marchese coming up.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville surprised the big pizza conglomerates by introducing Pizza Romana. It's a crispy Italian sourdough crust that's oval-shaped with gourmet pizza toppings. The big pizza conglomerates complained because they don't have the Pizza Romana sourdough crust. I guess that's just sour grapes. Order your Pizza Romana at pizzaville.ca or on our app.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
Durham Region, the wait is almost over because Mint Inc. is coming to Ajax. Whether you're a collector, player, or just love the thrill of the chase, Mint Inc. has you covered with the hottest sports cards, Pokemon, and TCG releases. From live box breaks to tournaments and exclusive drops, there's something for everyone. Follow Mint Inc. on social media or visit mintinc.ca for updates on their opening and all the events planned. Mint Inc. Ajax, coming soon to Durham Region. Get ready to collect, trade, and play.
Passion. It drives entrepreneurs, small businesses, and fast-growing companies. And passion inspires KPMG Private Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Private Enterprise is the number one private company advisor in Canada, navigating complex challenges to help you stay one step ahead of the competition. Search KPMG Private Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
MDF Mechanical has something in common with the Nazan Wally Sports Hour. A full-service mechanical company to building owners and developers in the GTA, we've been installing and servicing electrical, plumbing, and HVAC systems since 1986. And sometimes, Naz accuses Wally of blowing his own hot air. When we're not serving customers, the winning team at MDF Mechanical is listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour every Sunday along with you. So, let's enjoy the rest of the show. From one super fan to another.
They're not here to be nice. They're here to be right. The boys are back. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. And as I mentioned earlier, if you're planning on driving around downtown Toronto this morning, you better check your routes and you better give yourself a little bit more time. It's a Toronto Waterfront Marathon and it's turn downtown Toronto into gridlock. So keep that in mind. We're thrilled to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour the host of the Fan Hockey Show on Sportsnet, Matt Marchese. Good morning, Matt. How are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you guys? Hey, listen, this is what I say. If you're planning on going to Toronto, just don't. It's just easier. It's just easier. I tell people all the time, I say, listen, they say, oh, you go to sporting events? I'm like, not really, because I go to work downtown every day. The last place I want to be on a Saturday is downtown.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's where we're at.
Yeah, it's in terms of traffic chaos, this morning is, I'd say, is DEFCON 5, Matt. We had somebody who was supposed to join us in studio this morning, our IT person, our social media person, Charlotte Davidson. She had to turn around and go back. She couldn't get anywhere near the studio. Anyways, Matt, it's thrilled to have you. We're going to give you a bit of a break this morning. We're going to try and stay away from hockey talk. Okay, you host the Fan Hockey Show, and that's what you do. So we're going to try and not make this work for you. We're going to try and make this fun for you this morning. So let's talk a little bit about the Jays, Matt. There was a lot of criticism of John Schneider after the last game, Game 5. It's Game 6 tonight. Jays had a lead going into the bottom of the eighth inning, and then we saw Brendan Little on the mound, and the rest is history. There are a lot of people that were very complimentary of John Schneider at various times. His, you know, his move to Max Scherzer, leaving Max Scherzer in the game, what he's done with the Jays this year. He's been talked about in the Manager of the Year category. But his move at the beginning of the eighth inning the other night, man, he got a lot of vitriol. Let me tell you some of the stuff that I read. Former Sportsnet guy, Arash Madani, called it indefensible. He called it managing malpractice. That's the first one. I haven't heard that one in a long time. Managing malpractice. It's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback. It's always easy to be critical after decisions are made. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. I'm curious, as a sports expert, Matt, what are your thoughts on that particular move?
Oh, honestly, I hated it. Right away, when I saw that they were bringing in Little, my heart sank. Because, like, Joe Siddle pointed it out on the broadcast, and it's accurate. You got to go with your best guys in the biggest moments. Like, they had no issue bringing in Sir Anthony Dominguez in a bullpen day against the Yankees, right, in the third inning. So bringing him in or bringing Jeff Hoffman in, if you believe that Jeff Hoffman is the guy, Jeff Hoffman can go out and get you three outs, and then if you feel that he needs a rest, Sir Anthony Dominguez can come in the ninth inning and close things out. Like, I didn't like this, like, oh, we're going to, like, it's not like they played a matchup where Cal Raleigh is worse from the right side of the plate than he is the left side of the plate. He's good from both sides of the plate. That's why he hit 60 home runs this year. So I hated the decision. I just think that in that moment, knowing that you have the day off yet the next day, I just think that it was such a bizarre move for a guy that really has had trouble throwing strikes down the stretch. And it felt like everything was in the dirt. And the one that he left up was the one that he got punished for. And so, like, if the Jays don't win this series, a lot of people will look back on that decision and wonder if the what could have been if it was Jeff Hoffman or Sir Anthony Dominguez in the eighth inning there.
I'll turn it over to Mr. Marchese Sr. Naz?
Do you think that the
Naz, are you there?
Having trouble with the phone.
Okay. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Do you think that John Schneider pulled the trigger on the pitcher too quickly?
I know there's a lot of stuff that's out there about, like, I know people hate analytics, but at the end of the day, analytics is just information. And it took me a while to come around on it, but there are instances where I do believe that he has pulled guys too early. And it's always easy to say that if the team loses, but when the team wins, there are still people complaining, oh, he pulled him too early. It's like, well, guys, honestly, you can't have it both ways because it worked. So I think there's a time and a place. I think it's sometimes a gut feel. And I also think you look at just like the way that the guy is throwing. Is he hitting his spots? Is he missing a lot? Like if he's through 6 innings or 5 innings and he's at 70 pitches, but he's thrown, 42 of those pitches for strikes, and he's thrown, 28 pitches for balls. Like, it's not like he's dominating. So this is where you kind of got to, you got to be careful because the eye test works too. And you sometimes can see, hey, yeah, he's been efficient, but he's been fortunate with some calls. He's gotten a lot of ground balls, like, or guys just missing their spots. Like, there's a lot of that. So I'm not one to criticize for pulling a guy too early unless it's really evident that the guy is dealing. And the way that they clearly have confidence in their bullpen. Some would say it's warranted. Some would say that it's not. But in the playoffs, generally speaking, it's been warranted. And they've gotten caught a couple times. They're also not the only team that's gotten caught a couple times. That's baseball. The game of inches. Like, for example, Cal Raleigh's home run traveled, I think, 40 or 50 feet less than Ernie Clement that went right to the wall and the left fielder, or was it to center field? I can't remember. Made a leaping catch at the wall. I think it was a Rosarena. And so, like, that's the difference in a ball game. Ernie Clement hits a home run there. We might be having a different conversation. So that's where I kind of struggle a little bit with the idea of pulling too early. Like, these guys have all the information at hand, and they're watching the game a lot closer than anybody else outside of baseball experts. So I'm not super quick to criticize guys on getting pulled too early.
Lou?
Matt, good morning, sir. You know what? I thought it was a great move because they knocked off the Yankees. But besides that, no. Listen, going into the eighth and ninth inning, you're going with your horses, okay? I haven't seen Little pitch in the eighth inning all year. He's usually a setup guy to match up against lefties and probably in a fifth, sixth, or seventh inning. But when you got a two-run lead and your bullpen is well-rested and you don't go with your horse in Hoffman, I really have that, you know what? You got to second guess whatever Schneider did. And if you look back last year or even the year before, he's made some bonehead moves with his pitching staff that have caused the Jays to lose games. So this is going to come back on him. And, you know, he can say whatever he wants, and he's confident with Little. He has to say that because you don't want to throw your player under the bus. But without going with either Hoffman or Santander to face Raleigh at the start of the eighth inning, I think it was a completely boneheaded move.
Yeah, I hated it. Like I said, you go with your guys, the guys that you think can, like, Sir Anthony Dominguez is an eighth inning guy anyway. So I didn't understand, like, again, if Cal Raleigh is only hitting, like, if he's not a switch hitter, and I mean, the first two guys that Brendan Little faced in that inning were both switch hitters. So it's not as if you're playing a matchup game. Like, again, Cal Raleigh's not weaker from one side of the plate to the other. He mashed 60 bombs this year. Like, that's not nothing last time that I checked. So you're not even doing yourself a favor. So at that point, go with the guy that you think can get some outs. And maybe in that moment, they truly believe that Brendan Little could get guys out. I know that 99% of the world, except for Little's family, thought that he couldn't get any of those guys out. So that's, like, it's a real head-scratcher. Like, if maybe they didn't have the day off the next day, I could maybe make an argument, especially because Hoffman had pitched the night before. I could maybe make the case, but I can't make the case with the extra day off. That's the part that really got me.
I guess the other part is that Schneider looked down the bench and he didn't see Dwayne Ward and Tom Henke. So
that certainly helped.
You think of the bevy of riches that Cito Gaston had back in the, you know, you had Dwayne Ward and then you had Tom Henke, and that's why the Jays, I don't think they had Henke for the second World Series, but my memory may be failing me, but certainly the first one against the early 90s anyways, it was, you got Ward and Henke, man, that made managing a lot easier, let's put it that way. Anyways,
I would have left Barland in.
Well, that's, some people were saying that.
He pitched to four batters, right? And he could last a long time. He's a really strong pitcher.
Yeah. Anyways, the series ain't over. We got game six tonight. We got Trey Savage on the mound. Line this one up for us, Matt. Tell us your thoughts on tonight's game. What are you looking for?
Well, what's going to be interesting, and I haven't seen anything. I was a little out of pocket yesterday, but if George Springer is not in the lineup, that's a huge loss. And that was big. Like, when I saw him get hit by that pitch, the first thought that I had was, oh, bleep. And you're just, because he's been so good for this team. He was their MVP in the regular season. He's come up with some big hits in the playoffs. Like, this is the guy that you paid for and you thought that you were going to get earlier on in the contract, except you're getting later on in the contract, which is a real bonus. But he's been kind of like a heart and soul guy for this team. I know he gets paid a lot of money, but he's a driving force of this offense. And to not have him in the lineup would be huge. I would assume that if he's out for the series, they would be able to get an injury replacement. Who that would be, I don't know. But I would guess that at that point, Davis Schneider probably pops into the lineup. And then, you know, it's still a little bit of power. He can get on base, but it's not the same. Like, and it's no disrespect to Davis Schneider, but it's not the same as having George Springer in the lineup. So if he's there, I like their chances. If he's not, then I know it's not the end of the world, but it's hard to win when you get to the ALCS with two of your three best hitters. Obviously, Bichette out of the lineup still. But listen, Treya Savage has to come out and he has to have a performance like he did against the Yankees in game two of the previous series. Like, they can't get that's asking a lot because it's, you know, it hasn't really happened before. But if he can just... if he can grind through five innings, the Jays can get some offense early. Like, I think the key for the Jays tonight is just get out of the first inning. Like, that's felt like it's been kind of the story in the playoffs for them. Like, Max Scherzer did it, and Max Scherzer was great. Like, just get out of the first inning unscathed, get settled, and then be able to have your bats come up and do some damage in the first inning. Like, the Jays aren't getting one of the Mariners' best pitchers here today. So you've got to take advantage of that while you can. Like, I don't want to say they wasted a great pitching performance, but they kind of wasted a great pitching performance from Kevin Gausman the other night. So you've got to rebound, and it's, you know, it's so easy to say this, but your best player's got to be your best player. Vlady Guerrero Jr.'s got to have a night to remember. And he's had a lot of them in the playoffs, and you know, it's funny because we've joked about it at work. There's so many people try to make so many comparables to playoff failures by the Toronto Maple Leafs and playoff failures by the Toronto Blue Jays. But guess what? The difference is that the guys that are paid to perform are performing in the playoffs for the Toronto Blue Jays. The Toronto Maple Leafs haven't got that. So the comparisons are not, they fall on deaf ears for me, but that's, Vladdy's got to, you know, he's really got to have a great game today, as does, you know, like, it's the lineup's been able to pick each other up, and that's got to continue. The biggest key tonight is, you know, they wasted a lot of really good starts to innings. I think they started four innings in a row with a man on base, and three of them, I think, were leadoff doubles, and those guys were stranded. Like, that kind of stuff can't happen. Like, you get a guy in scoring position, and this is something they've done really well all year. You've got to make it happen. And tonight is, I mean, it's all hands on deck. Like, you need to get to game seven. And that's what I think we'll see tonight.
We've got about 4 or 5 minutes left in this segment. Naz, I don't know if I'll turn it over to you if you want to continue this or if we want to
talk. No, I'm going to
talk about our Buffalo Bills.
What's that, sorry?
How many wide receivers do the Bills have now?
Well, it's a really good question. I mean, I don't know. Like, the development of Keon Coleman hasn't been there. Khalil Shakir has been clearly their best wide receiver and certainly most consistent. Josh Palmer, I expected a little bit more from, especially because he was such a good separator with the LA Chargers. Their best receiver has been their tight end, Dalton Kincaid, and him missing that game against the Falcons was a big loss for him. I know Dawson Knox scored the touchdown, but, you know, here's the thing about this team, and I Wally said this was going to be fun, and of course my dad turned it into mental Matt breakdown.
What's wrong with the Bills, Matt? What's wrong with the Bills? We went through the same thing last year, but this seems different.
No, it is, and it is different. I'll tell you why. Okay, the offense last year was great, and I don't think that this is an offense problem. What I think it is the defense is not doing the offense enough favors. They're third last in rushing yards against, so other teams are able to control the clock on them. So the Bills are running an offense that needs to move a little bit faster. The other problem is that the Bills are not creating turnovers on defense like they were last year. They're minus one in the turnover category. This is an offense that, does not turn the ball over a lot, but they have turned it over a little bit more this year. Josh Allen has, I think, three interceptions now. Still not a lot, but they've been able to take care of the football, generally speaking. The defense has not been able to get the football back for them. So they're not putting them in good position. They may be able to force three and outs, but they're still getting the ball and they're getting it deep in their territory. So they're having to drive 80, 85, 90 yards sometimes, 75 yards. Like, that's a lot of work for an offense to consistently have to do that. And when you start playing better teams, guess what? They're gonna get you. And New England is a much improved team. We could say whatever that we want. I hate them with all my heart. Don't you worry. But they're a good team. And Drake May's a good quarterback. And some of the in-game adjustments they haven't been able to make. Like, for example, the last 2 weeks, Drake May rolled out to the right side. They forced him to the right side all game, and he killed them up the right sideline all game. Last week against the Falcons, the only guy that Michael Penix was throwing to was Drake London. And all he did all night was throw to Drake London, and Bijan Robinson ran all over them. It was literally two guys that beat the Buffalo Bills, and they also beat themselves with a couple turnovers. So there's a lot wrong here. They missed Ed Oliver for a bit, so that hurts the run game. It hurts the pass rush as well. They've been really banged up in general. They're getting a couple of guys back after the bye. Michael Hecht, who's a defensive end, played for the Rams, Canadian kid too, really good player. And Larry Ogunjobi is a defensive tackle. He should help in the run defense as well. But the secondary leaves a lot to be desired. Tre'Davious White, he just looks really old and really slow right now. And their corner that they drafted in the first round, Max Harrison, has not come back from injury yet. I don't even know if they've opened the practice window on him. So that's a guy that you were counting on to be good for you. And their safety play has been garbage. Between Taylor Rapp and Cole Bishop, like, a couple of big plays here and there, but certainly not enough, and certainly not the safety play that we've seen from the Buffalo Bills in years past. I know I'm going on a long diatribe here, and sorry, guys, because I don't get to talk football on my
show. We love it. We love it, Matt.
But they've been driving me crazy watching this team. And I'll tell you, the biggest issue that I have right now, and it was so frustrating watching this, the Bills are 4th-and-1, and they're doing an end-around reverse to Elijah Moore. I'm sorry, but you have the MVP holding the football. You should never be taking it out of his hands. And that, to me, is a very frustrating point of emphasis. And I think a lot needs to change if they want to turn this thing around. Because guess what? The New England Patriots lead the division right now, and it's not the Buffalo Bills. Not something I think a lot of people thought that we would say after this many weeks.
And anyways, the one thing you have in your favor, Matt, is you haven't suffered as long as your father and I have suffered, okay? So...
It's true.
although I constantly remind, I actually remember the Bills winning the AFC championship, AFL championship in 1964, if you can possibly believe that one. But it's been a long time, so you got a few more years to go to suffer to equal your dad and I, Matt. But anyways, hope springs eternal. You got Josh Allen at quarterback. You got a trade deadline coming up. Maybe they can fill a couple of the holes, and you know, maybe we can get back to being a Super Bowl favorite the way we were a few weeks back. Anyways, Matt, we can't thank you enough. I always like to remind our listeners, you're the host of the Fan Hockey Show on Sportsnet during the noon breaks on Sportsnet. You want to listen to some great hockey talk? It's Matt Marchese and Mike Fuda. I highly encourage our listeners to tune in. Matt, we can't thank you enough.
No problem, guys. Hold on. I have somebody wants to say something.
Okay, absolutely.
Say it.
Daddy.
Say hi, Nono.
Hi, Nono.
How precious is that? That's amazing. That's awesome. That's awesome, Matt. Thanks so much. And keep up the great work you do on Sportsnet.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Matt Marchese, we're going to take it to break. We're going to talk some NCAA college football when we come back. And we have Frank Pomerico, the captain of the 1973 Notre Dame Fighting Irish. I'm going to talk about the Irish Trojan game, and I'm sure we can get in some other college football talk while we're at it. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville introduced...
Pizzaville?
Right. When Pizzaville introduced Pinza Romana. It's a crispy sourdough crust, oval-shaped, with gourmet pizza toppings.
Pizza toppings.
It's so light and delicious, once you try it, Pinza Romana will be all you can think about. Call Pizzaville for...
Pizzaville?
Call Pizzaville for Pinza Romana, or visit pizzaville.ca.
Pizzaville.ca.
Passion. It drives entrepreneurs, small businesses, and fast-growing companies. And passion inspires KPMG Private Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Private Enterprise is the number one private company advisor in Canada, navigating complex challenges to help you stay one step ahead of the competition. Search KPMG Private Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
MDF Mechanical has something in common with the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. A full-service mechanical company to building owners and developers in the GTA, we've been installing and servicing electrical, plumbing, and HVAC systems since 1986. And sometimes, Naz accuses Wally of blowing his own hot air. When we're not serving customers, the winning team at MDF Mechanical is listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour every Sunday along with you. So, let's enjoy the rest of the show. From one superfan to another.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
If you're into Pokemon, sports cards, or pop culture collectibles, Mint Inc. is the only place you need. Right off Highway 400 in Vaughan, Mint Inc. is the GTA's home for live events, trading experiences, and the best selection of cards and collectibles. They're an authorized PSA dealer, always bringing you the latest releases, and they're always buying cards, too. From Pokemon packs to sports slabs, toys, and more, Mint Inc. has it all. Check them out in Vaughan or visit mintinc.ca. Mint Inc. Collect. Play experience.
Opinions expressed on the Naz and Wally Sports Hour are those of Naz and Wally and their guests.
There are two ways to argue sports with these guys, and none of them work. The boys are back, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. We're thrilled to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour the captain of the 1973 Fighting Irish team, Frank Pomarico. Frank, how are you this morning?
Well, I am great. We had a great game last night for the Irish. So the Irish nation is feeling pretty good today.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to have you on, Frank, and I'll tell you why. Because I'm an Irish guy, and my two co-hosts, Naz Marchese and Lou Franceschetti. We've got a whole bunch of Paisans on this morning, by the way, as well. They're Alabama guys, so I get to actually go toe-to-toe with them this morning, and we got a great victory. Mind you, Alabama had a great victory yesterday as well. But, you know, let's talk about the Irish to start off with, and maybe we'll get into some other college football discussion. The Irish and the Trojans is always a marquee matchup. It had all kinds of ramifications for the Irish this year. It really was, you better win the game or you're probably not going to make the college football playoff. They have this amazing trophy. I think it's called the Jewel Shillelagh, if I'm not mistaken. So the Irish took that home last night. Tell us all about the Irish performance last night and where you see them so far this season.
Well, the series has been a great one between Southern Cal and Notre Dame. It goes back 90-something years. Notre Dame has won 50 of these games, and SC has won 37 with five ties. And many times the national championship is on the edge of this. The Jewel Shillelagh is a trophy that was established in 1952, and the winner gets to hold the trophy for that year. It's made of oak, and it's from Ireland, and it has engraved on it from the Emerald Isle. So it's a pretty neat thing for one of the teams to take that home. You know, I can remember back in the 70s, Wally, where Notre Dame won twice in that 10-year period. And both times they won the national championship, which was a great thing for the Irish. But also, Southern Cal, many times when they would beat Notre Dame, they would go on to be right at the top of the national scene. So it's always the history of this is great. The Heisman Trophy winners have been tremendous in this game. And it's always a real classic. You know, last night's game was a great one in that the Irish had to run the ball in order to control the clock. And also, it was raining like crazy in the second half. So with that, it kind of negated Southern Cal's great passing game. In some ways, they still had 328 yards passed with two touchdowns, but there was two critical interceptions that Jaden Mojave had. And I tell you, the excitement was off the charts, especially in the second half. The score was very close. Southern Cal went ahead 24-21. Then all of a sudden they kicked off to Price, who took the ball 100 yards for a touchdown. It just blew the place apart. Went ahead 27-24. Actually, the Irish missed the extra point, so it was only a field goal separating them. Overall, it was just an electric atmosphere, and the Irish were able to pull it out at the end.
Yeah, just you brought back some great memories for me. Before I turn it over to the Alabama guys here, I share some of these memories, Frank. You talk about the two national championships in the 70s, and Tom Clements and Joe Montana. Who can forget that? And you talk about winning in the rain. I think this was just retribution for the Irish, because I remember in 70 when poor Joe Theismann had to play in a monsoon down at the Coliseum, and we lost our national title hopes that year to the Trojans. So anyways, it's always a thrill going down a little bit of memory lane. Now I'm going to turn you over to a couple of Alabama guys who are sure going to remind us how successful Alabama's been against the Irish in the last little while. Anyways, go ahead, Nez.
Frank, what's the strength of the Notre Dame team this year?
I would say the running game is really a critical part of this team. Jeremiah Love ran for 228 yards last night and a touchdown. Price ran for 87 yards and a touchdown. I mean, when you have the two running backs like that that can control the clock and can control the tempo of the game, at any point, these guys can break your back on defense. They can get a seam, and they don't need a big seam. They get a seam, and boom, they're gone. And they can fly, these two. Price may have a little bit more shiftier moves, but Jeremiah Love, he hesitates a little bit, looks for that opening, and boom, he's gone. I mean, these are two great backs. And with C.J. Carr, he's only a redshirt freshman, but he has tremendous poise, he has tremendous leadership skills, and he has a tremendous arm. And when you put all those things together, he has a certain kind of generalship of the football game. You know, his grandfather was the head coach at the University of Michigan for about 12 years, and they won a national championship in 97. And I'm sure when DJ was a little boy, maybe in the fifth grade or something, he was talking to his grandfather, not about Sesame Street or anything like that, but more about how to beat defenses. So he comes from a great pedigree, and the Irish are really lucky to have him.
Lou?
Frank, I was switching back and forth last night between Bama and Notre Dame, and I just missed the 100-yard kickoff return, which for you must have been a great feeling, because we know as professional athletes, if you go out and score a goal and the other team comes back and scores one in the next 30 seconds to a minute, it's a little bit of a backbreaker. But the play that caught my eye was Southern Cal's driving, and I think Notre Dame's up 27-24 at the time, and they use a small little gadget play. And I think they had Malachi Lemon try to a reverse or double reverse, and then he wanted to throw the ball, and he almost threw it backwards, What were you saying, or what were you thinking at that time? Because it more or less turned the whole game around right at the end of it.
You know, Southern Cal has such a strong offensive line, and they have this King Miller, who's the walk-on. But last week against Michigan, he had 158 yards, and last night he had 70 yards. So, I mean, this is a pretty good runner, even though they lost their two major runners, which was Jordan and Sanders. Jordan had almost 700 yards, and he's out. I don't know how long he's out for, but he missed the Notre Dame game. The gadget play, sometimes they work, and sometimes they don't. I thought he should have thrown it away before he got tackled, but what was happening? It was raining. The ball might have been slippery, and it kind of fell out of his hands as he got grabbed. And it was unfortunate for Southern Cal, but it was very fortunate for Notre Dame. They recovered the ball as Southern Cal was starting to get that momentum back. And they are such a strong offensive team. Their receivers are tremendous. When you look at, they had Lane, had six catches for 111 yards and a TD. They have two great tight ends. McCree is one of them. He had a fabulous touchdown, the first one of the game. But as the game was going on, the rain really became a factor. Even though the Southern Cal was throwing the ball okay, but it wasn't just the same. It was starting to rain. And I'm not making an excuse for Southern Cal. I'm just saying it was great for the Irish that they were having a great running game and able to control the game, where Southern Cal had to, at the fourth quarter, they were kind of in desperation and trying to score. They didn't score any points in the fourth quarter. So Notre Dame scored seven. So for them, they kind of had a goose egg in that fourth quarter. And I tell you, they are so powerful and threading when you have their passing game on the top edge. Now, the other thing I must say about Southern Cal, they're two different teams. When they're at home, they really are strong. When they're on the road, they don't play quite as well. When they played Illinois a couple of weeks ago, they got beat. Right after Illinois had gotten shellacked by Indiana, 63-10. So you just wonder if this is the same kind of team on the road that they are at home, because they're awful powerful at home as well.
Frank, going around top 10 college football playoff, who's going to qualify? You know, I think perhaps the way to describe college football today is parity. Has hit college football through nil money, through transfer portals, and all of that. And in a lot of ways, that makes it more exciting. You know, it's not like you don't start the year and you already know Alabama's going to win the national championship. They got to struggle to you know, a lot of teams got to struggle to make the playoff. If we go around college football today, obviously Ohio State's in number one, Miami number two lost. Interestingly enough, the Irish aren't even the top team in the state of Indiana right now. Indiana is the top team. They're probably going to end up at number two. Then you've got Oregon and, you know, so many other Ole Miss lost yesterday. Georgia's fighting its way back. Alabama's number two in the playoff from the odds makers to win the national championship. From a competitive point of view, I don't think college football's ever been more exciting, Frank.
Well, I think it's really changed. The idea of the portal, people changing so quickly, the idea of being paid, this has really changed the game. And I think it's forced some coaches to actually leave the game. I think that's why maybe Nick Saban has left the game, because there is less of the fact that you want to play competitive football as opposed to how much money am I going to make. And it used to be you came to a school because of its academics and because of the coach. I went to Notre Dame because of Eric Parsegian. It was a great academic institution, but the key thing was Eric Parsegian for me. It's about people in a lot of ways, in most ways, and not about places. If you have a great place, but your coach is somebody who's not fair, who's not disciplined, there's no loyalty involved, your experience is not going to be that great. But when you have an institution that is good and you have a coach that is covering your back, is going to do the best thing for the young man, which is to get his degree and be able to take the values that he's learned in college and go out into the world and make a difference, well, then you're sitting in a great place. So, you know, it's really changed. So hopefully Notre Dame still has some of those traits left. I think Marcus Freeman is a great young man, and I think he's doing a good job. He attracts some good kids, and they have some awesome athletes playing at Notre Dame right now. So I think they still have a chance. If they can get into the playoffs, they can make a run.
Anyways, Frank, our 10 o'clock witching hour has arrived. We've got so much we'd love to talk to you about. I think we've only scratched the surface. We're going to get you back real soon. So thanks so much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Anytime. I appreciate the invite.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks,
bye.
Frank Pomerico. Lou, thank you very much for joining us. And Naz, as always, last word.
Let's go Blue Jays.
Let's go Blue Jays. To all our listeners, have a fantastic and safe week. We'll talk to you again next Sunday morning. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.